Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Jack Farmer. He's Andy Rossi. This is the Evolution of Movie Show. And once upon a time, we recorded one of these things, Andy.
Oh, well done. I'm excited for this one.
Oof. This is one I know you've been looking forward to for a very long time. We're reviewing one of your all-time favorites. I don't want to give it all away, though. First, we got to bring on our guest, someone I'm very excited to chat with, the one, the only, Nick Dorsey. Nick, how are you?
I am fantastic. Mr. Rossi, we all knew this day would come. I'm shocked you and I haven't been on a podcast talking about Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio already. Can't believe it's taken this long.
That's true.
Yeah, most of the time when we all do it, it's not recorded. It's just us gushing. Yeah. Now we get to talk about it for real. And Nick, one of the reasons I'm excited to have you on is you actually are helping to produce a short Surprise to See Me that's working with one and only Andy Rossi.
Yeah.
I know. Fantastic, right? We're super excited about it.
Andy, when is that coming out, by the way?
In the editing process as we speak. So we shall see. Probably next 6 months or so, hopefully.
I host a movie review show. No idea how long it takes. It's like, hey, I started writing this movie. I'm like, cool. Is it coming out next week? When is it done?
Editing takes so long, man. It's crazy. So we shall see. My feature, just to give you an idea, we shot it July 2019. I released it like August of 2021. So about 2 years it took.
There was a little bit of COVID in there, though, that slowed things down.
That's true. A smidge
of that. Let's talk about what we're here for. This is the Evolution of Movies. And what we do is we chat about a movie book club style, but we call it Evolution of Movies because we always watch a movie that came out 1 year after the last movie we watched. So we started in 1980, went to 1981, 1982. Now we're all the way up to 2019.
Wow.
A time when Andy was filming his movie Dead Body. But also when movie theaters had hits like Knives Out, 1917, and of course Stuber. But we aren't talking about any of those. We're talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the movie IMDb describes as a faded television actor and his stunt double strive to achieve fame and success in the final years of Hollywood's golden age in 1969, Los Angeles. Nick, had you seen this movie before, and what were your thoughts going into it this time around?
Have I seen this movie before? Of course I've seen this movie before. I think when it came out, it was ridiculous just how many random celebrities there are in it. Like, even I started watching it, in the first scene, I wrote this down, the very first cowboy is... AKA John Kreese, Sensei Kreese from Cobra Kai. I'm like, the Cobra Kai guys in this? Like 2 seconds into the movie. This movie has everybody. I don't know anybody who's not in the movie.
Well, us.
Yeah, I had a small scene,
Jack, was your picture in the background?
My picture was in the background. Look at that handsome devil. Nick, have you gotten your giant picture of me yet? That's
got to send you one. Do a review of the podcast, and
that's a good looking picture. I do not, but I definitely have one ordered though. It's on. Hopefully, it'll be here on Amazon before Christmas. So it'll be going straight up in my office afterwards.
Yeah, if you're in the audio only version of this, too bad you don't get to see the picture. You got to check out YouTube. So this is a movie that I definitely was, I saw it in theaters and I liked it. I had some thoughts about it. I thought it was a little long. I'm going to be honest with you. Anytime it goes over 2 hours, I'm like, come on now, wrap it up. But, I have some thoughts about it this time around. I thought I viewed it differently and I thought it was very interesting. But Nick, we always like to play a game. What it is Andy's going to tell us what he thought about the movie going into it this time around, but also he's going to guess the Rotten Tomatoes score. And then you have to guess whether or not the actual score is higher or lower than what Andy guessed. And I haven't kept track of who's usually right, but let's just say it's a dead heat even. And your guess is going to decide whether or not the guests win or lose.
No pressure.
I gotta be honest. I think Andy's guesses are gonna be pretty accurate on this thing. So
this one's tough. Tarantino's
Let's see if you can do it.
Brad Pitt and Tarantino is hard for me because everything they do for me is 100, especially Brad. He can do no wrong.
It's true.
I know this wasn't as adored by critics as, say, Pulp Fiction, but I know it was well received. So I'm going to go high, but not as high as I personally think. So I'm going to go, I'm going to make it tough for you here, Nick. I'm going to go 89.
89, just out of that 90% category, just out of the Raiders of the Lost Ark, just out of the Ghostbusters era stuff. Where do you think, Nick, do you think the real answer is higher or lower than 89%? Andy has a one guess right on the button, so you can pick that also.
He's all that. Or not she's all that. It was he's just not that into you.
Another classic. I'm surprised that's not rated 89.
Yeah.
It should be.
I got to say, 89's a good – I bet that's going to be within at least probably 2 or 3 points of where the actual is. But I'm saying it's a little bit higher. You know, the movie got nominated. You know, there's a bunch of Oscar noms coming out of there. Pitt got the Oscar. I think it was pretty well rated. I'm saying higher than 89. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking 92-ish.
Appreciate
92.
That.
That's a good – that'd be a good guess because it's Hollywood loves movies about Hollywood, right? Rotten Tomatoes has it sitting at 85%.
What?
So
come on.
Which is actually kind of right in the middle of what most movies are, I think. It puts it right in the center, I think. I know most people say 50 is the middle, but really 85 is kind of where most people fall
in.
That's
erroneous, 85. Erroneous.
Yeah, we need to write some letters.
Strongly worded letters, by the way. Hi, Rotten
Dear
Tomatoes,
sir.
I'm upset about this 4-year-old movie that the world has completely moved on from. Can you please
85 with all the star power? Yeah, no, they're way off on that. It's got to be higher. Yeah.
Well, let's chat about this one. So we start with a commercial for Bounty Law, an old Western. We also get an interview with Rick Dalton and his stunt double, Cliff Booth. They explain that the stunt double carries the star's load. And on Saturday, February 8th, 1969, Mr. Schwartz meets with the fellas. We find out that Cliff has to drive Rick everywhere because he lost his license. And Mr. Schwartz says that he was enjoying some of Rick Dalton's work. And we get a look at some of the different movies he's been in and where his career is now. Doing guest shots and losing fights. Rick is posed the question, stay in Hollywood and watch his career go downhill or go to Rome, the star in Westerns, and win fights. Nick, tell us about the characters of this movie and the world that they live in.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the like I said, the opening scene is hysterical. Just all of a sudden, he's, you know, shooting people, starting trouble. Isn't the other guy from Pulp Fiction? Right? No, not Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, Michael Madsen.
Yeah, Madsen. He's in it right away. It's just absolutely hysterical. I love the character of Rick Dalton in Bounty Law. He's so fantastic.
It's I love Michael Madsen, by the way. He doesn't have a big role in this movie, but I feel like every time he's in a movie, he's one of those guys you go, oh, it's that guy.
Yeah, he's going to cut off some ears.
But Andy, this is it's an interesting thing they talk about in Hollywood because you see it a little bit now where the stars, you would think it's pro wrestling. The stars win fights in movies and the guys who aren't the stars tend to be the guys losing.
Yeah.
And I can't help but think a contemporary thing with this is like The Rock wins every fight he's in, even when he plays the bad guy. And you have to imagine there's a little bit of that they're alluding to in this.
Makes so much sense. Yeah. You want to see what would Van Damme be if he was losing all his fights at the end? You know, he's always winning against the bad guy in the end. I disagree with you, Jack, when you said this movie's too long. I think it's too short because I want to see him in the movie where he's saying, what does he say? Fried sauerkraut, when they show DiCaprio with the fire torch. And then they show him dancing the Green Door song. Like, I want to see that. So I want to like go see more of Rick Dalton. But that beginning scene, oh my goodness, just throws you right into the 1969, right?
Yeah.
Just the way everything looks, their wardrobe, the interview, and it gets you knowing who the characters are right in the beginning because what does Cliff Booth say? He says, yeah, I carry his load or something. It's just funny.
Sounds about, like, right. Sounds about right.
just these guys, you know, their relationship, you get it right away and you get the era right away. It's just,
That's where I said I have different feelings about it. Now, you know, Andy, something I harp on a lot. Once you go over 2 hours, every second's got to matter or I'm going to get crabby. This is a weird one in that case, because especially because there's truth to this movie. I don't know the real life story enough to know where things changed versus where they were real. Because obviously for anyone who doesn't know, this is like, I don't know, what does Quentin Tarantino call it? Like his revenge series where it's like he changes time.
Yeah. Kind of like he did with Inglourious Basterds, how they killed Hitler. You know, I won't reveal too much, but
that was kind of the end.
Well, no, I mean, the shared
it's such
takes,
a recent though. Movie. If they might spoil it for the people who haven't seen it, it just came out.
But this was a movie. I think a lot of the stuff that otherwise would have been, you would have said you didn't need that. It did help create the world. Like, I do feel like it helped me fall into this world. So I'm kind of, that's why I said at the top, I don't know. I did feel long, but I also, there was a lot of stuff that I felt like you needed to have in order to lose yourself in this 1969 LA world with these characters.
And if you didn't know that Sharon Tate was a real person and had a real story, real, you know, sad story, then I don't think this movie hits you as well at the end.
Yeah.
Just like if Inglourious Basterds, if you're like, who's Hitler? Then you probably right. be like, oh.
Well, when I saw when I saw Inglourious Basterds, I did not know what this whole thing, I did not know about this whole revenge thing. So I was like, wait, what? They killed him? That's not how it happened. I was totally like thrown off by that. But so in any case, I had to make a note about the whole blowtorch thing. if I was a little nitpicker here, I would say there's no way they had special effects like that back in 1969, but it was super fun. So I let it slide because I was like, this is great. But you're right. Nick, would you want to see? I felt like half the movies and shows they mimicked, I wanted to see.
I got to admit, after seeing the blowtorch scene, I really want to get a blowtorch. Doesn't Elon Musk sell those that they were talking about? Like, he actually sells them online. You're able to buy one. Like, how fun would it to be just be standing in your backyard with a blowtorch? Going around blowtorching things. It looks fantastic, by the way. And I loved how he complained that it was too hot, actually. He's like, yeah, is there any way we could turn the heat down on this thing? It's like, it's a blowtorch, Rick.
It's fire.
It's fire.
All the characters in this movie, and this is a Quentin Tarantino thing, I don't know what I'd call it, but all of them have just so much personality and character. That makes them also interesting to see. Something I'll probably say a lot is I echo Andy's thoughts. I want to see Rick Dalton and Cliff Booth adventures. I want to see like a TV series of them just doing different movies and going off on their, you know, interacting with stars in Hollywood and being these characters. They're so interesting.
Absolutely. I think the defining moment of their like friendship too, that you see, is when DiCaprio says, what does he say? He says something like, buddy, I'm a has-been or something like that. You know, you could tell that Rick Dalton is starting to deteriorate as far as like his acting career, his life, you know, everything's like going to start heading in a downward direction and Cliff's going to be there for him.
Yep. We also get a quick little scene here, and Nick, I don't know, we're not going to go too far into it yet because it plays so much more, but some hippies are dumpster diving and singing. this was because I knew nothing of the Sharon Tate story. Yeah. Like, these are all names I'd kind of heard of, but I didn't know the story. If you asked me about it, I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, this is this tragedy that happened.
Yeah.
So, like, as a lot of this was happening, it's like the hippies were coming around. I didn't it never even occurred to me who these people could be.
Yeah.
When you watched this, did you have an idea of the story, or was this just kind of like, okay, these are random kids singing songs and dumpster diving?
Just random kids. Yeah. You come to find out, like, that they all actually did stay at the Spahn Ranch. Like, a lot of those characters, Squeaky is a real person in real life.
Yeah.
I also thought it was funny, the flower girl, mm-hmm. Do you know her who her mom is in real life?
No.
It's that... Andy McDowell.
Oh, that girl. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few people who later went on to do some pretty big things in this movie, by the way, too. But yeah, so this whole movie caught me off guard, by the way. Like I said, I didn't really know this story going into it. So I was just kind of, even when they were going to the Spawn Ranch, I was like, oh, okay, they're going to Spawn Ranch.
Oh, yeah, I had no idea what any of this stuff was until after. I mean, we're so young, you know, we weren't around for this stuff.
So youthful. So Cliff is trying to tell Rick that going to Rome doesn't sound like a death sentence. It sounds pretty cool. While checking out a girl who is way younger than he is, Rick checks out his neighbor Polanski and the girl he's with. Cliff watches his small TV and gives his dog a bone back home and watches TV while Rick rehearses lines in the pool, and Polanski heads to a party at the Playboy Mansion with the celebrities of the time. Steve McQueen tells a story about Sharon Tate loving both Roman and Jay and that he never stood a chance. Nick, this was one of those scenes, again, going through it, I would say you didn't really need the Playboy Mansion scene, but it does help you feel like you're a part of that world and that time.
Yeah, I mean, Jack, how do you have a movie about Hollywood without the Playboy Mansion in the 70s, right? I mean, it just brings it all together. And again, Steve McQueen, a.k.a. Bobby Axelrod, who's playing that guy. Again, just another huge celebrity who's in the movie. I love that scene when they just come in, they just start dancing immediately. It's fantastic. Also
No, you keep going.
Yeah, I was saying, and the fact that Cliff Booth lives in a trailer in the back of a drive-in movie theater was also fantastic.
I was going to say, that is... And Andy, I'll pitch this to you. That's exactly the next thing I was going to say. It's interesting that Rick Dalton, the star, is so unhappy about his situation living in the Hollywood Hills while his best friend lives in a trailer behind a drive-in. And it is kind of interesting how sometimes you don't realize how good you have it. And I don't know if that was what this movie was going towards, but you do see just how different these two are, even though they're good chums.
I love where Brad Pitt lives, where Cliff lives, and the dog stuff. Even the way he's just so cool. Brad Pitt is the coolest guy ever. Just the way he dumps out dog food. I'll admit I was trying to do that after the movie, and it definitely doesn't work out as cool. And his little noises he makes with the dog. He eats his mac and cheese out of the pot. Like, mm-hmm. I just thought that was amazing. But then I was thinking, stuntmen, I actually know some stuntmen pretty well. They do well. They have a very nice career. They make some good cash. So I was kind of like, come on, Cliff. Who's running your books, man? Like, you need a better house there, buddy.
In Cliff's defense, this was 1969. So I don't think they were doing quite the same stunts they're doing today. Probably didn't have a union or anything like that to help him either. I was thinking, this is a good looking fella for being a stuntman. I think they make a comment about that at one point. I'm like,
that's what they tell me. that's what they tell me.
I wanted to talk about the Playboy Mansion for a second. I just thought it was great how they showed the Playboy Mansion in like 1969, 70 time frame. And it reminded me of Austin Powers, for one. The one Polanski totally reminded me of Austin Powers, his car, his hair, the way they were dancing. It was like an Austin Powers dance sequence. But I was just thinking just the difference, because I think of the Playboy Mansion, I mean, maybe to use Jack's word, I'm a fuddy-duddy now, but I feel like it's gross there. Like, I would just think it'd be like a lot of like, you know, CD. I don't see like big celebrities hanging there. I see like, you know, I don't know, Ron Jeremy and Gary Busey hanging out there. And it's like, Gary Busey. I don't know why I said him. But like, I feel like it's kind of dirty and debaucherous, where like back then it seemed like really fun and cool. And like, I don't know, it's just like a better vibe back then.
Well, it's something we've talked about before. Movies from like the 70s, and this was 69, but basically the 70s, there is always kind of a porn theme to it, where it's just everywhere and everyone's into it and it's okay. And I think that's part of why everything you say, Andy, about it being gross, you're right. But I think back then it was like, yeah, this is the party. Like,
yeah,
this is what we do. And yeah, it's just a, it was just a, as I got to talk about Cliff again because we'll talk about it a little bit.
Keep going.
I want a Cliff movie or a show, or again, I want to see like him interacting, and we'll get more into it obviously in a little bit. But this stuntman that is super cool and can beat up everybody and is happy living in a trailer, interacting with superstars, is the coolest thing in the world. Like, I just love, I know he's a real person. I want to just take that and separate it and just have him living his career and doing different jobs on different movies and interacting with people and being too cool for all of them. I could watch that all day. That to me was my favorite part of the movie. It was him just not being bothered by anybody throughout the whole movie and being cool.
Everything about him is cool. Like, even the way he drives his car, of course he drives it fast and, you know, screeches down the hills and stuff. And it's like, it's not like a as cool a car as Rick's, but it is. It suits him well, like convertible. It's still cool.
And even though, and we talked about this when we did a movie, the movie with him and Robert Redford in it, where
Spy Game,
yes, where his style is totally out of style today, but he still looks so cool. Like, if you rocked his look today, you'd be like, yeah, that's, well, no. If he rocked that look, you'd say that's so cool. If I rocked it, people would be like, what is this idiot doing? Why is he dressed like that? But something about being the most handsome man to ever live, I guess Brad Pitt can pull it off. So we continue on to February 9th, 1969, and Rick and Cliff are on the set of Lancer. Rick needs Cliff to fix his antenna at home and says the boss of the stuntmen doesn't like Cliff from some business on Green Hornet. In the trailer, they say they're going to cover Rick up, and they hope that no one even recognizes him. Why does Randy hate Cliff? Great question. Randy says Cliff killed his wife on a boat, but that wasn't all. Randy gave him a chance one time, and Bruce Lee was talking, and Cliff was laughing, and we got a fight, and Cliff got fired. Anyways, Cliff drives by the hippie girl, but isn't going their way this time, so he heads to Rick's place and leaps up onto the roof and listens to Sharon Tate's music next door as he watches a guy head to Sharon's place before being told the person he's looking for doesn't even live there anymore. Back on set, Rick chats with Marabella, who is a very serious actor, and they share stories of the books they are reading. Nick, I did not realize until the end of the second time I watched this movie that the guy that moseyed on up to this house was Charles Manson. It didn't even connect with me until like the second time. I was like, that's who that guy was.
Well, it didn't make sense at first because you're like, yeah, who's this weird dude? And they're like, oh yeah, that's Charles Manson. Also, I thoroughly enjoyed the fact how Cliff jumps onto the roof, how he jumps onto the fence, then onto the roof, all in like 2 seconds. Even his jumping onto the roof is cool and amazing.
It's like a little Spider-Man.
Yeah. Right.
He makes it look so excellent.
Do you think that was Pitt, or do you think that was his stunt man? I bet that was him. He could do it.
Of course.
Yeah, actually, because he probably has a stunt man, and the stunt man's probably watching this going like, you think we live in trailers and like eat macaroni and cheese every day? That's kind of condescending to us. And then Brad Pitt's like, yeah, it kind of is. Go jump on the roof.
And can we just talk about, once he gets on that roof, whose brilliant idea was it to say, hey Brad, we're gonna take that again, this time I don't know, maybe lose the shirt? Or do you think he suggested it? Hey guys, you think maybe I should lose a shirt on this one?
I think he improved it. I think it was just like, look,
there's
man.
No reason. I mean, so, there is, but there isn't.
I got to admit, when I was watching it the other day, as he took his shirt off, I Googled how old is Brad Pitt because I wanted to know. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, how's this guy still so freaking ripped? And then it came up 59 years old. So what, it was 3 years ago. So he's probably 55, 56 when he's shooting that. It's how many 55-year-olds still look like that? It's disgusting.
Like, there's got to be like, I don't know. He's got to be like draining the life force out of someone else to keep his body somehow. I don't know. I don't know how it works. I don't know. That'd explain a lot, but I don't know how it works, but there's no natural way you look that good at that age. I mean, that guy, if you told me he was like 40, I'd believe you. Yeah. In fact, if you showed me just the body and you told me he was like 32, I'd be like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, there's a healthy 32-year-old. That whole scene, though, with him in the flashback, oh my gosh, I love that scene because you have him take off his shirt, great, and then like you have him like flashback, and I'll get to the flashback in a second, but then they cut back to him, and then he just goes, fair enough. You know, yeah. After he like goes through it in his head. But great cameo, Nick, you were talking about cameos. Kurt Russell.
I know where you're going about that. Yeah, Kurt Russell. Well, also, do you know who the woman who plays his wife who he murdered was?
I didn't. Who was that?
Ooh, I'll give you a hint. Back in the 90s, she did a lot of commercials for a skincare company.
Was that Molly Sims? Is that who that was?
It was the Noxzema girl.
Oh, that was Rebecca Gayheart.
Rebecca Gayheart. I was like, good for Rebecca Gayheart. I haven't seen her in anything in 20 years, and she's Brad Pitt's wife who's about to get murdered on the boat. I was they got Noxzema girl for that part. I'm like, good for her.
They do such a good job of that too, because they just leave like his spear pointing at her, but you actually never see it.
I was gonna say, I love that they don't actually answer the question about whether or not he killed his wife or if it was an accident, but also. I didn't know that about the Noxzema thing, but they do play a Noxzema commercial later in the movie when he goes into the Spawn Ranch house. It's a plane in the background.
Wow.
So I wonder if that's a double wink and nod. But this, I think one of the scenes that steals the movie is the Bruce Lee scene. I think we all would agree with that. And I love just the, hey, who is that guy or whatever? Is that, he killed his wife and got away with it. This guy? It's like, yeah, that guy. Oh, and then they fight, and it's just again. I like that they don't give a winner because I'm sure that no one knows how that really went. And I like they play to that, but seeing him fight Bruce Lee again. Nick, this is one of those things I want to see more of. Cliff just having a terrible career, but very entertaining to watch.
I wanted to see who won that fight. I love how he throws him into the car, and then Kurt Russell's wife comes in and starts screaming about the car. It's so great. What happened to it? Well, I threw this little bastard into it.
It's great, too, though. Like, I mean, I totally respect Bruce Lee. I love Bruce Lee movies. But, he was an actor. So I think, I think his family wasn't too happy with the way they portrayed him. But, going back to my boy Van Damme, not sure how well he can do in a real fighting situation. He can fight great on film. So this is, I thought it was kind of fun to be like, maybe Bruce Lee wasn't quite as strong fighter as we thought.
This is a little bit more serious, but one thing I do want to touch on is Rick reading the book next to Mirabella and how he is reading a book about a cowboy who is a Bronco buster, but he's not as good as he used to be, and how he's, to quote the movie, says he's becoming slightly more useless each day. And I don't know if it's because I'm getting older, but like that kind of struck me a little bit, that idea of getting older, not being as good as what you once were. And Andy, this is clearly a parallel to how Rick feels about his life.
This scene is so good. This little girl is amazing. She says, her line makes me laugh and like sad every time, poor easy breezy. Like, this is so cute. And she's so like precocious and just, man, what a good little actor she is. But DiCaprio's so good in it, because just his whole, like, I don't, that whole scene, they, it's interesting too, they shoot it in like kind of like this like wide shot, and they just stay on that the whole time until she says something, until he gets emotional, and then they like zoom in on him. So you really like have like this feeling of like, oh, poor Rick. He's really feeling it right now. But yeah, it definitely resonates for me. That's for sure.
There's a small line that gave me a little chuckle, Nick. And I want you to, if you have any thoughts on this scene, is she's like, it sounds like a really sad story. And he's like, you're going to be living it in about 15 years.
How funny is that, the 40-year-old washed-up actor is giving this advice to the 10-year-old girl and basically being like, enjoy this now. Your life's going to be over in 10 years. This is what makes Leo so fantastic in this movie. My favorite scene in the entire movie is right before this, where he's yelling at himself in the trailer. and he mm-hmm. keeps talking about how he had 8 whiskey sours the night before.
Yeah, so funny.
Over and over again, he's like, God damn, 8 whiskey sours. Like, you couldn't stop at 2 or 3. He's like, you had to have 8. And then he's staring in the mirror and he's going, you will not drink anymore. You will not drink. And then 2 seconds later, he's drinking again immediately. Like,
right. Doesn't he look at himself too? He's like, I'm going to blow your brains out.
Yeah. Like, one more time, I'll blow your brains out. It's like, don't you dare drink anymore. And then 2 seconds later, he's literally drinking and he spits it out in his trailer. I loved it so much that he had 8 whiskey sours.
I know. I read
not
that
5, 6, or 7, but 8 whiskey sours.
He says it a couple times too.
Which is great because he was by himself the night before, just rehearsing lines.
Yeah.
Drinking whiskey sours in his pool. It's fantastic.
That part is great too. We didn't even talk about that, where he's going over lines and how he's literally like making himself a drink and he's doing the voice of Pepe. And so funny. Leo's like, he's funny. Like, I don't think people give him enough credit. Like, he's a funny actor.
He's good at being funny in his seriousness, if that makes sense. Like, he's being very serious, but it's funny how he's doing it. Like, he's taking something so stupid. I don't know. It's a very funny, like, yeah, like the whole, I can't believe I drank 8 whiskey sours. He's being very serious, but it's stupid. But that does lead us to the next scene. Sharon is driving and picks up a hitchhiker. She drops off the hitchhiker and then goes to pick up a book, then goes to see her own movie and wants to get in for free, even though no one recognizes her. The audience seems to like her performance, though. On set, Rick is chatting with James Stacy about almost getting the part in The Great Escape before the scene is filmed. And it's the one Rick was practicing. And there are some bumps in the road, but they get it done. But Rick is unhappy about his performance and says to himself he'll kill himself if he doesn't start getting his lines right. The next scene gets filmed, and Rick acts the crap out of that scene, and Marabella says it's the best acting she's seen in her life. Meanwhile, Cliff sees the young hippie girl who needs a ride to Spawn Movie Ranch. They flirt until Cliff asks for ID and puts an end to it right there. Andy, you talked about Leo. Leo, this scene with Luke Perry in it, I had to write, Leo had to act the hell out of a scene as an actor acting the hell out of a scene, followed by tearing up and acting the hell out of a scene that just needs to have the hell acted out of it. It was like a peeled onion of acting in this scene. It was actually like very incredible to see.
Yeah, and my favorite character in this movie is Cliff Booth, I will admit. You know, I'm a Brad Pitt fanboy, but Leo deserves every award for this performance, especially that performance is crazy, just the way you're just saying. And yeah, we get a nice cameo from Luke Perry. We get Timothy Oliphant. You know, there's, like Nick was saying, these people keep popping in, you know. And the stuff with Rick Dalton as the Steve McQueen character in The Great Escape was pretty funny. He's just like, no, never had a chance. And then they had this show. And that looks great. It's kind of like back in like Forrest Gump when they would like insert him in like with Kennedy and stuff. It looked like Leo was kind of in the scene. It was funny.
Yeah, it was this makes me want to go back and look in to see how accurate some of this stuff was. I'm sure there's some truth to it. I don't imagine they would just throw that in there for the sake of throwing it in there. But I broke this scene out, Nick, because I feel like, Leonardo DiCaprio absolutely crushes this scene. I feel like there are so many levels to what he's doing in acting. I'm not an actor. I'm not going to pretend I know everything that goes into it, but just again, just the layers of what this character and what this scene had to have was incredible.
Yeah, Jack, it's funny because you could see it at the end when he actually nails it too, how happy he is that he nailed it, and getting the compliment from the girl. It's like, my favorite thing is like he's almost in tears afterwards, right? Like how good he was. And I love at the end of it, he goes, effing Rick Dalton. Like he says his own name, like he nailed it, which is so peak Rick Dalton, right? Like and also could make a quick comment. How common is it for people to pick up hitchhikers in the 70s? It seems like they're just picking up hitchhikers left and right in the movie. Crazy by today's standards, but like every 2 seconds, they're just like Sharon Tate is a movie star and she's randomly, hey, I'll give you a lift here. You can come follow me. Like, Was it that common? It's crazy. I mean, just picking up hitchhikers left and right.
It does seem very strange. I was telling Steph that when I was watching it last night, but then I'm like, there is Uber, which is kind of hitchhiking.
Stuber, if you're watching the movie with Batista in it. But I thought that with this, I think the big thing, because this was another scene where I was like, I don't know if I needed to see Sharon Tate pick up a hitchhiker. But I think it did some character development of her being sort of a free spirit, a happy, helpful person, kind of built some sympathy for that character. I will say, and this is where listeners may not like what I have to say.
Ooh, yeah,
this
is where
people are going to love it, Jack. Don't worry.
I loved Rick Dalton. I loved Cliff Booth. And I know you needed Sharon Tate in this movie to make the whole thing work, but I wasn't really that interested in her story. Outside of the fact that you need her for the end, mm-hmm. I didn't really care about her buying books and going to see her own movie and stuff like that. I was kind of like, I want to get back to seeing Brad Pitt on a rooftop with his shirt off.
I mean, agreed. It's funny that we're saying this and it's, you know, we're three men not praising Margot Robbie is in this movie. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you because it doesn't really matter too much to Cliff and Rick, but it kind of does because the ending we get, which we'll talk about, him being allowed to be in that kind of crowd is mm-hmm. kind of, you know, what he wanted. So we needed to see her, and Tarantino wanted to include her story. So we needed to see that for the historical element of it. But if it was just like an all fictional story without her in it, I think it still would have been super fun. But the one thing I did like about that scene, though, is when she's watching the performance, it actually is the real Sharon Tate, which I thought was kind of cool. Kind of let her have her moment, you know, or her family see her on screen and all that. So,
right. It was, and look, like I said, I get why she's in there. And I think I agree with you. I agree that it's cool that they're showing her actual scenes. And of course, with everything that really happened, I think it's good that she's in there. I think I just liked Cliff and Rick so much. I just wanted to see more of them whenever I was like, I want to see them do their
thing. Yeah, it was almost like kind of like two movies or something. And there is one thing that I will say about my hero, Quentin Tarantino. I don't like all the feet stuff. He's got like Margot's dirty feet on the seats. And then later the hippie girl's feet. I don't know.
That's like, it's gross. 90% of Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, remember Dust Till Dawn? There's a lot of foot stuff. You know, I don't know. Yeah, not my jam.
It almost seems like they have her in the movie just for the sake of having like, oh, we need to have this beautiful actress in the movie. Cause like, she doesn't really do very much outside of just being beautiful, right? Like, she just kind of dances around at the Playboy Mansion.
She dances.
She has the scene in her house where she's kind of dancing to some music. And it's just kind of like her role. It just seems like it doesn't have a lot of, like, a huge place in the whole movie, but they have it in there anyways. But, you still got to respect. She was also the Duchess in Wolf of Wall Street. So I guess you got to have the Duchess in the movie.
I'll circle back and say that the first time I saw this again, I knew nothing about this story. So it irked me a little bit more than this time around, where now I can kind of see they're trying to build, I think, the sympathy for her. And so that, like, as you're watching it, you're like, I hope nothing happens to her because she's so nice. She's so charismatic. She's beautiful. She's all these things. I feel terrible if something was going to happen to her. So it does build that little bit of buy-in. But the first time I watched it, with again, not knowing the true story, I was like, why are we watching this girl watch her own movie? I don't get it. But
and you bring up a good point there too, because even watching this again, I remember the first time I watched it, because I don't know how Sharon Tate died. Like, I don't know the story really. I just had heard of it. So I'm like, oh my God, is this where it happens? Is it at the theater? So I saw her like walking around. And by the way they set up that area in Westwood, like, it's crazy. They like transform that place. Yeah. Like, it looks like that era, like the whole thing when they're on Hollywood Boulevard, the set design on this is so crazy. Like, you feel like you're in 1969.
At the Spawn Movie Ranch, a group of layabouts greet Cliff, but are bummed that Charlie isn't there to meet him. But Tex chats with Cliff before Cliff says he wants to go have a chat with George Spawn. But everyone seems against it, but Cliff decides to go have a chat with him anyways. A girl at the door tries to talk Cliff out of seeing George, but Cliff is undeterred, and the girl says George is blind now, which might explain the mess in his house. But George is irritable and seems like he's okay with it. All the kids yell at Cliff and he tries to leave, but Cliff finds a knife in his wheel. So he beats the snot out of a guy until he fixes the wheel. And the girls go to get Tex, but Cliff is on his way out before Tex arrives. That night, while watching FBI with Rick in it, Cliff leaves an acid-soaked cigarette and Mr. Schwartz uses the show to pitch Rick in a spaghetti western. So this is a line we like to throw around on this show a lot. For me, this is where the movie starts. That stuff was fun, but when he's at the ranch, for me, I was like, oh my God, because this is where I'm starting to realize, oh, this is Charles Manson.
There's stakes, big stakes.
This is where it's starting to click for me, and he's walking in that creepy house, and Tex is terrifying as like this weird, I don't know, all these guys, these hippies are terrifying to me. But Nick, I can't help but just love the fact that he beat this dude up and made him fix the car. And he says, can I get a rag to wipe my face first? And he says, nope, tire first.
how great was this punch? And in a way, only Brad Pitt can do it. It looks cool. He like punches him and then the guy flies up in the air, like in slow motion, and falls down. The Spawn Ranch scene is absolutely fantastic. I don't know what's the better part. Is that part or where the scene with him and Squeaky, which by the way, I didn't realize a lot of those characters are real people. The girl Squeaky was a real person. Tex was a real person. I kind of like how they weaved in all that. But I loved how she called him Mr. 8 years ago. And he still walks in and she's like, I'm not gonna swear in the pod, but she's like, oh, by the way, he's sleeping. I effed his brains out like an hour ago. You're gonna have to wake him up.
It's just sweet little Dakota Fanning that says this.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You know, I do wonder. It's funny. I feel like they must be so upset. Like I'm defending these terrible people who kill people, but I'm like, they must be so upset. Like, how are you depicting me like a loser on this movie? But yeah, Andy, this is again one of those scenes where I'm like, I just want to see Cliff walk around and like deal with stuff that happened in Hollywood.
Oh my gosh. And there's so much tension. Yeah. I didn't know those are real. Squeaky and all those names. I didn't know those are real names either. I thought they were just for the movie. But when Brad Pitt gets to talk with Spawn, Bruce Dern, that scene is amazing. Like, Who are you again? Like, just that role was actually originally written for Burt Reynolds, but he had passed before they got to shoot that. But Bruce Dern does such a great, hilarious job in that scene. It's just so funny because you're very much like, you're like, oh my God, this guy's getting taken advantage of. And then like you realize he's pretty fine with everything.
Yeah, because he's got Squeaky who's helping him sleep. But yeah, it's so funny because you expect him to be like, help me, like I'm stuck here, and like that's gonna be where the movie goes. But he's like, no, I'm good. or he's like, you okay with the redhead? He's like, I told you I'm blind. That's true.
It's the greatest part about the end of it, where he puts his hand on the Cliff's shoulder and he's like, you've really touched me today by coming here. He's like, I'll leave you alone. I gotta take a nap so I can stay up late and watch Bonanza or whatever.
Yeah.
Again, just the coolness of Cliff as everyone's yelling at him and flipping him off and stuff. He's just walking to his car, not going fast, not Love picking that. Up his pace. Just I'm going at my pace. I'm doing my thing.
I mean, what balls on him too? Like those spawn people are terrifying. And if I was in his position and they're like, no, you shouldn't go talk to him, I'd be like, yeah, you're probably right. I'm going to get out of here. But he's just like, nah, I think I'm going to check it out. And I'm like,
he's always so much cooler and confident than everybody, right? He's like, why is that impossible? He keeps asking the question, like repeating the questions he said to him. He's like, why is that impossible? Why can't I see him? Like, he's not fazed at all. He's like, look, I'm going to get in here and this, and he flicks the door. Isn't gonna stop me. It's so fantastic. It's great. Yeah.
And on a hunk scale, what'd you guys think of Tex?
I wouldn't put him up that.
Tex next to Pitt. Come on. Like,
I mean, he's Elvis now. So
that actually shocked me, is that he was Elvis. Yeah. Cause I looked him up. I was like, he looks familiar. And I was like, oh, It's Elvis.
Yeah.
So many random people in this movie. And is it Lena Dunham or whatever? Yeah, she's in it randomly. It's just over and over again, just like all these.
Well, who doesn't want to be in a Tarantino film?
About old Hollywood. I mean, playing famous people. Come on. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Playing murderers.
I mean, when he reached out to me, I was flattered, but I wasn't available.
You're busy. So, you had this podcast.
I wasn't old enough to play Cliff Booth, so they gave
you turned down the role of Rick Dalton, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah, I had it, but I was like, you know what? You're gonna have to go with your backup, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, same for me with Cliff Booth.
But 6 months later, Rick knocked out a bunch of these Westerns and got married to his Italian co-star. Also, Rick thinks he's finished his career, so he's letting Cliff know that this is the end. Rick and Cliff go to El Casa Vega to have a final drink together and get so drunk, they have to get a cab back home. Sharon is pregnant now and has two friends move in while Roman is out making movies. They go to El Coyote and come back home after some margaritas. They continue to hang out for a bit until some of them start winding down. Cliff takes his dog for a walk and smokes the acid cigarette. The hippies from Spawn Ranch drive up and Rick Dalton rips them a new one. They say Charlie told him to kill everyone, but first they have to nerd out about how Rick Dalton just yelled at them before saying they got to kill the people who taught them to kill on TV. Nick, I have to tell you, one of my all-time favorite things, I think, in any movie, and maybe I say this a lot, but I don't know why, but I just think the greatest thing that has ever happened in cinema is Rick Dalton coming out in a tiny robe with a blender of margarita to yell at the hippie kids in their loud car because it's late in a private road, and then drinking from the blender while cussing them out.
You don't do that normally. You're not walking around in a robe in your house with a blender full of margaritas. It's fantastic. I can't remember maybe on a handful of times I could ever remember wearing a robe, but let alone walking around my house in a robe is so fantastic.
A short robe, by the way. A short robe so that if you were to like pick something up, you're seeing everything.
Wait, as he says that, I have a picture of Nick in a robe.
Oh my gosh, yes. I did.
What were you saying about not wearing robes?
Yeah, what was that? What was that about not wearing robes?
I got on how many? Yeah, that's actually amazing. The few times I've ever worn a robe, and Andy immediately within 30 seconds me wearing a robe.
Margarita was not pictured, but it was there.
I just love how the guy's like, here, let me just turn my car around. He's like, back it up, drinking his margarita.
Which, for the record, is you know how there's a doesn't he have a picture of himself in his driveway? Like,
yes,
like, giant picture.
Andy, you have a picture of yourself in your driveway, right? Like when I come to your house, there's just a giant picture of you in the back.
No, he has a picture of me. It was so funny. It's like, listen, Chief, get this mechanical a-hole out of here. He was so angry at these guys.
It's so perfect though, because that's kind of like the way he was living now. You know, he kind of went to Italy, did all these films, now he's back, he's got this wife now, like his life's changed a little bit. He's a little bit more aggressive, he's a little bit more pissed off and aggressive now.
Yeah, kind of has a swagger back a little bit, right? Like comes back with his new wife, he's made some Westerns, it says he put on 20 pounds from eating all the pasta out there. Like, yeah, life was good for Rick. He's made nice little comebacks, feeling
and confident. It's been too long. We haven't talked about Brad Pitt. So he takes the cigarette and he goes, and away we go. I just love that.
Again, I just got to circle back. I love how after they get yelled at, they're just like, I just got yelled at by Rick Dalton.
Yeah.
That's Jake Cahill, right? Yeah.
Jake Cahill just yelled at me.
And
another cameo there in the car, the girl that freaks out and leaves is Ethan Hawke's daughter, Maya Hawke from Stranger Things.
Yeah, that was another one I noticed that was has made it pretty big. Smartest one of the group, as we will later find out. But
that other girl in the car, I was the most frightened of her when she was like freaking out, man, hey man, and I'm like, maybe get her out of the car.
Well, that's
not seem fun. Would not want to be in the car with
no
her.
I'd leave.
Well, that's where I thought they did a good job of making this group terrifying, though, is how the guy's like, either you're saying either Charlie told us to kill him witch style, or you're calling me a liar, and you're like, oh, this guy's crazy. And then she's like, TV taught us to kill. We should kill the people who taught us to kill. I was like, oh my God, these people are insane. Like, Looney Tunes. But I'll be honest. If you had asked me before we watched this movie, I thought the Rome part was a big chunk of the movie, but they didn't even actually show
Rome.
It was like a little, oh yeah, they were in Rome. I was like, oh, I thought that was like an hour of the movie, but no. Like
Kurt Russell voiceover.
and this is where they're clearly getting into very real, like this is real time stuff, because they start talking about where they were at what times, what restaurants they went to, hottest day of the year, all that good stuff. Let's get into the last part of this movie, because I think this is the part that sends everyone home with a smile, unless you're a hippie. One of the hippies runs away with the car while the others walk their way up to the house as Cliff returns and the acid is starting to kick in. Speaking of kicking in, the three hippies kick in the door to Rick's place, but Cliff is so high he's not sure they're real until he remembers they're from Spawn Ranch. The dog is a good boy and chews off Texas testicles before then going after the girl with a broken nose, and Cliff curb stomps Tex. Francesca gets in on the accident and punches one of them before the other one gets her face slammed into just about everything. The last one shoots Cliff before running through a glass door to where Rick is, who calmly grabs a flamethrower and blasts her with it. The cops show up, and with that, history has changed, and Rick's neighbors invite him up for drinks.
Wow.
It sounds quick, right? But this is just one of those awe-inspiring scenes. And Andy, I want to start with you with Tex introducing himself by saying, I'm the devil, and I'm here to do devilish things. And Cliff just says,
it was
something dumber than that.
Yeah. I'm as real as a donut.
Just what was great about this, Andy, and I want you to take it from here, is you're worried that Cliff isn't going to be able to defend himself for a second here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially like what he says, he goes, the train has left the station. I've definitely been in some experiences, not doing what he's doing, but you know, edibles and whatnot, where you're just like, whoa, but him with the gun against the real gun is so funny. He's just got like his hand out against Texas real gun. But yeah, you're right. Like the whole time you're like, oh no, Cliff, he's not going to be able to fight. He's on drugs. But it is so gory during all this part where he's literally like you said, he smashes that girl's head over everything. It's like against the phone, against the wall, against the countertop. And then the other girl's eye is like falling out. Like
it's a matter of two hits her in the face. It was like a, look like a can of something, just like
I think it was one of the dog food cans.
Yeah. which is funny, if you've seen Bullet Train, he does the same kind of toss to that guy's head with the water bottle.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt's good at throwing stuff.
But it's what I like about it is, I'm not saying it's a super realistic scene, but like he doesn't do anything unreal. Like he throws a can at some, if you got hit in the face with a can, you would go down. Mm-hmm. If a pit bull bit your balls, you would be distracted.
Distracted. I'm distracted.
My mind is elsewhere right now.
Help, I'm distracted.
But then he gets stabbed in the hip.
Dog.
And he just like taps it. He's like, huh.
Yeah. That's great.
So Nick, I want you to do the best you can to explain to me your reaction when you first see Rick come out holding the flamethrower.
Yeah, so my first thought was, are flamethrower, like, is there no prep to a flamethrower? Like, he just has it on hand, ready to go, and, like, start immediately? Like, I didn't think they're, like, that easy of easy access, but I thought it was fantastic that Rick Dalton actually kept the flamethrower in the first place. And that was his first reaction. Like, I probably would have ran out of there, right? Like, my first reaction would be to just run away or something. But he's like, you know what? I'm gonna go get my flamethrower and completely fries her in the pool, which is very satisfying. Especially that chick seemed the worst out of all of them.
Yeah, she deserved the most brutal death scene.
Yeah. It's
weird. This is the only movie I can think of where I see a very capable person brutally murder three very overpowered kids and feel like, yeah, they deserve that.
Yeah.
Like, they do a very good job of making you completely like want them to get everything that they get at the end, even though you don't really see a whole lot of them throughout the movie.
Especially that girl. Dude, I don't remember ever seeing her. The one that's like the craziest one. I don't know if she's crazy.
I mean, she had her nose broken, a dog bit her, and then she was lit on fire. I think we gotta give her a little bit of leeway
for sure. That's a rough evening.
Yeah, she's had a rough time. She's had a rough go.
No, it was something stupider than that.
and he says, Cliff says, and you were on a horsey.
Cliff is just the coolest, and Rick is cool too. It's interesting though, when you look at how cool they are, you would think Cliff was the star and Rick was the backup, because Rick is insecure and all this other stuff, but
his reaction to that girl falling in the pool, Rick's, is so funny. Like, it's just like a, oh, what the, you know, trying to piece it together. And like Nick said, probably most people, myself included, would just run out of there, call the cops or something. Instead, he's like, you know what? Got this flamethrower.
Well, I got it. No, go ahead, Nick.
Isn't that the cool thing about Tarantino? Like, some of his movies where I feel like a lot of movies today, like, they don't end how you want it to. And it always has kind of like a weird, sad end. Like, this gives you everything you want in the ending, right? Like, kind of like Django at the end, where he sort of gets his revenge and like kills everybody. It's fantastic. It ends in the way you would exactly want it to end. It's so satisfying. It's great.
Almost as satisfying as a red apple cigarette. Doesn't burn your throat. Tastes like a cigarette should. but Andy, I got a very serious question I got to ask you, and I want you to answer it. It might be a little personal, but I want you to try to be as honest as you can. If three people broke into your home and tried to murder you, your dogs, and your wife, and then afterwards you just went to go have drinks with the neighbors, how would your wife react?
Not well, Jack. Not well.
It was like, yeah, I'll go over for some drinks. I was like, you're just leaving her there? Someone just tried to break in and kill her.
What did you say? She's taking enough Ambien or sleeping pills to sleep for 3 days or something like that.
That's true. He did say that. Yeah.
I would never hear the end of it if I did that. Like, she's like, yeah, she's fine. I don't know if more people are coming, but
yeah, that's true. Yeah, he didn't know that.
Like, I'm just gonna go have some drinks.
More spawns.
So that was
so funny. I never really thought of that. You're kind of just like, oh, good for Rick.
Yeah, my friend's in the hospital, and
was almost got attacked, but I'm gonna go by the neighbors and have more frozen margarita.
Yeah, I gotta meet Austin Powers guy,
who wasn't even there. Yeah. So as we wrap this up, this one was, I'll be honest, I enjoyed it a lot more the second time around. I don't know if it was because maybe I knew the story, so I understood what they were doing a little bit more the second time around. I don't know if it was just because I was able to get lost in the world a little bit more. It was a little long, but I'll give it a pass there. I went to Twitter and I asked some folks what they thought about it. @GritGibson said, personally, I loved it. It's a contender for my favorite film. Zenya said, I find that alternative ending shtick satisfying, and I like the visual aspect a lot. George Hermosa said it was a phenomenal movie. Casey Richards says, love the movie as a time capsule and a love letter to the period. And of course, Howdy Price says, one of my favorites. I watched it every day for a year straight. Wow. And finally, we'll say, Greg
every
Morgan.
Day?
That's what the tweet says. Man. Reading the tweet. Wow. And Greg Morgan says, most satisfying ending ever when Brad Pitt stomps that dude's face in so badass.
I was going to say, so satisfying when Brad Pitt took his shirt off. And say, yes.
I was going to say, was that the guy who saw it every day for a year? Was that Andy Rossi's burn Twitter?
Yeah, I was going to say, somebody else does?
But I honestly, going into it, as I remembered it being long, I was kind of like, okay, I'm going to have to watch this again. But I enjoyed it a lot more this time around. Maybe it's because, again, I knew the story. But overall, I enjoyed getting to go back and watch this one. Andy, I know it's one of your favorites, but what were your overall thoughts going back on this?
Yeah, I mean, when I first knew this movie was happening, I was like, this is it for me. It's never going to get better. You got Leo, Brad, Quentin all together. It's like, I don't know. I don't know how it could be better. If John Stamos made a cameo, maybe that'd probably be the only thing I'd recommend. But yes, I think I remember talking to people about this, and I was definitely a person that was like, you got to see it. But I think if you didn't know anything about Sharon Tate, you probably are confused of like what the heck that was about. So, and I don't think we are, you know, a little younger, I guess, than we didn't know this story. My parents probably do. So I think that's the challenge, is to have people that don't know that story to really understand that ending. Or it's not quite as satisfying. I guess when you do know it, then it's more satisfying. But yeah, I mean, I think it's great. I love Cliff Booth. He's probably, aside from maybe Gary Oldman in True Romance, is probably my favorite character.
He's a pimp in that one, right?
Yeah, Drexel.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Nick, you get the final say. What overall thoughts on this one now that we've wrapped it up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's peak Leo, right? It's Leo at the top of his powers, peak Pitt. To put everybody into the same movie at one time is pretty fantastic. I just don't think there's like a lot of boring scenes. Wait, hold on. What is it? Oh, God. Oh my gosh, look at that.
How did I not show this off before?
Well, right, yeah. I love how he's already swimming in the pool. That's fantastic. Yeah. Like, with the margaritas. Yeah, I'll never forget the flamethrower scene. As a matter of fact, I think after this podcast, I'm going to go on Amazon, see if I could order one as a defense weapon for my house. I'll just keep it in our spare room or something.
Yeah, let us know how long it takes to get going.
That's what you got to realize.
If you have a sign outside your place that says the owner has a flamethrower, no one's breaking in.
No one's coming into your house, and you can just start the flamethrower up. But yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Instead of caution dog, it says like caution flamethrower.
flamethrower.
Yeah, this was a good one. Now, Nick, this is where we play the game. It's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. I already know like 12 ways you can get to Kevin Bacon with this one, Andy. But I'm curious, what route did you take?
You know what I'm doing. Brad Pitt was in Sleepers with Kevin Bacon.
Bing, bang, boom.
Pretty easy.
Pretty easy there. So that does it for this episode. We go to next year where we review Tenet. And that one I've not seen yet. I hear it's so confusing. I'm kind of nervous about it, actually. We're going to go to 2021 for Pig.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Pig. I know nothing about Pig.
So I haven't seen either of these movies. So
I know that it's involved Nicolas Cage and a pet pig. So I'm there. Count me in for watching that
movie. I'm already sold on that one. So
yeah.
So that does it for us, Nick. Thank you again so much for being on. And thank you to everyone who is watching. I forgot to say at the top, like, comment, share, subscribe, 5-star review, all that good stuff. You made it this far. It's the least you can do. And we will see you all next year.